Chapter 23. A Pirate Walks the Plank. The year had not been kind to Robert Stewart, Jr. His sturdy build had softened, filling out a pale and wrinkled gray suit. Even behind the mask, his countenance seemed to have dimmed. He had grayed. Several prime years lost in the span of one. So had I. In the cold and austere confines of the U.S. District Courthouse in Arlington, Virginia, Stewart's cunning and colorful caper had come to its end. He had come to accept his sentence, as many as 35 years in prison. He had already pleaded guilty to 3 counts of felony fraud, all of which were uncovered when investigators followed up on what ProPublica had reported the previous year. It had been more than a year since his invite aboard that jet set me off on a meandering quest through unsavory networks of profiteers and other riffraff. On that mid-June day in 2021, I sat in the courtroom with a familiar weight. A story I'd written was the catalyst to a man's ruin, which reporters do not take lightly. I reminded myself that this was his doing, and that what prosecutors unearthed after the reporting eradicated curiosity. I no longer wondered whether Stewart was a deliberate fraud or just a befuddled victim of his own ambition and circumstance. He was the very pirate he protested all along, and I was his confessor. He sat 2 oak pews behind, no family or friends with him, pretending not to notice my backward glances and scribbles. He watched the criminals before him on the docket as they faced Judge Rossi Alston, Jr., presiding on a high wooden perch behind plexiglass. A U.S. Marshal with tired eyes, wearing a mask stitched with Marine Corps insignia, brought the criminals in and out. They were convicted brawlers, sexual assaulters, and thieves, cuffed as their lawyers pushed court dates and entered guilty pleas. Stewart did not belong with these men, but he would soon be among them. Because he had cooperated with federal prosecutors and had no previous criminal record, Stewart had been allowed to remain free in the 4 months since he pleaded guilty. He had gone home to Alabama to be with family and sell off possessions to repay his substantial debts. The first count, making false statements to the federal government, stemmed from what I reported along our hapless journey in late April 2020. The U.S. prosecutor discovered Stewart had explicitly stated in emails to FEMA and the VA that he had millions of N95 masks in his possession. As a result of those lies, he was awarded 2 no-bid contracts, together worth $38.5 million. Had the federal government done a shred of meaningful vetting, neither the contracts themselves nor this charge would have come to pass. As one of Stewart's friends would note in a letter to the judge, had he not invited me along for the ride, it might all have gone unnoticed. But Stewart had sealed his fate in other ways. The second count, wire fraud, stemmed from his gaming of the Paycheck Protection Program. As I had suspected, Stewart had grossly exaggerated the number of employees on his payroll to enrich himself. Probably the most common scam perpetrated against the $800 billion program. Stewart created fake tax records showing he employed 37 people for a monthly payroll of $322,000, when his actual monthly payroll totaled less than $14,000. On that false information, Celtic Bank approved an $805,000 loan to Federal Government Experts, LLC. He also defrauded the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program for another $260,000, which he used for personal expenses. It was this million-dollar-plus pot of cash that Stewart used to pay for the private jet on which he'd taken me, his family, the VA, and the American people for a ride. Taxpayers had paid for it all, theatrics included. These were mad times. And Stewart was far from the only person to cave to the temptation of quick and easy government money. As the judge had wondered aloud during the plea hearing earlier that year, anyone with a shred of empathy could see how a man with big dreams could dip his toe into the bog, only to fall deeper and deeper until his lies buried him alive. This could be assumed of Stewart, if it were not for the third charge, theft of government funds. After federal watchdogs referred Stewart's case to criminal investigators, the U.S. Attorney's Financial Crimes and Public Corruption Unit pored over a decade of his personal finances. They found Stewart had been bilking the VA since 2013, 7 years before he'd been awarded that life-changing contract for masks. Stewart was an honorably discharged veteran of the Air Force Reserve, which entitled him to VA benefits and an edge in competing for government contracts. But that was apparently not enough. From September 2013 to October 2020, he collected $74,000 in additional medical and education support from the VA by lying on paperwork. He claimed to have also been a decorated veteran of the Marine Corps, discharging at the rank of corporal. He supplied the VA with false paperwork in which he claimed to have attained, among many accolades, the National Defense Service Medal, the Sea Service Deployment Ribbon, and a Kuwaiti Liberation Medal. That chunk of ill-gotten change paled compared to the value of his other schemes, but the charge alone carried a maximum 10 years in prison. It was the first I had ever heard of a military veteran impersonating a military veteran. Stewart stood up and walked out just before his case was about to be called. I followed and stopped in front of the entrance to Judge Alston's courtroom to head him off on his return. He soon exited the bathroom down the hall and walked toward me, his head down. "Rob, I gotta ask," I said. "Is there anything you want to say before this?" He walked past without a word and took his seat. I understood. There was little else to say. He had pleaded guilty to all three charges in February 2021, and in the intervening months before this day's sentencing, had done what he could to establish contrition in the eyes of the court. He liquidated his assets and paid his entire restitution, a rare occurrence before sentencing, of more than $1 million to the Small Business Administration, $13,000 to a bank, and $74,000 to the VA. Ahead of the sentencing, his lawyer asked for leniency and a sentence of probation or house arrest, noting that Stewart's infant son needed those precious years with his father. In the defense's sentencing position package were photos of Stewart with his boy and copies of his real military certifications and achievements, including a letter of commendation from the Undersecretary of Defense related to his work as a contract specialist. Despite knowing he'd likely never be admitted to a state bar, Stewart had enrolled in law school in fall 2020 and was receiving decent grades. He wanted to use it to steer others from the slippery slope of white-collar criminality, his lawyer argued. Longtime friends of Stewart, including two I had encountered, wrote character references on his behalf. The letters, though effusive in their praise, hinted that even Stewart's closest allies struggled to discern truth from fantasy in Stewart's life. Dawn Lockhart, his human resources manager, wrote that she had known Stevie Turtle since the two were in the seventh grade. He earned the name because he wore thick eyeglasses, and when he removed them, he resembled a turtle in Disney cartoons. From her letter, it was clear she did not know the finer points of the case, of his documented mendacity, and seemed to think this whole ordeal was related to a payroll glitch. Nonetheless, she argued he has always been regarded as a person of character. An older friend who had known Stewart since he was 12 recounted the time, during a long road trip, when a cat urinated all over Robert's bag, soiling souvenirs he was carting back to his family in Alabama. The young Stewart didn't get upset, the friend said, and explained that it was no one's fault. More recently, the friend said, Stewart, through kindness and patience, had helped him become a more informed citizen on issues of race in the South. Another friend, the attorney who had advised him not to bring a reporter along on the private jet to Chicago, wrote that Stewart had helped him get a job as a consultant at the Department of Defense years before and became a friend and mentor. Rising from a disadvantaged background in Alabama, He had spent his formative years as a soldier deployed in Iraq, and he had really internalized the U.S. Army's values, the friend wrote. However, Stewart was never an Army soldier deployed in Iraq. He was an Air Force reservist who managed procurement and small business programs at the Defense Department in Virginia. Stewart had helped him during a difficult time, the friend said, after he received a shocking medical diagnosis and ended up bankrupt, unemployed, and homeless. Mr. Stewart treated me as if I was a member of his own family, the friend said. As to the charges, the friend wrote, Mr. Stewart is not responsible for the catastrophe surrounding the federal government's efforts to secure PPE. What Mr. Stewart's real crime here is appallingly bad optics. Mr. Stewart made the mistake of inviting a journalist from ProPublica along on the flight, the friend told the judge. Finally, the judge called Stewart's case. Judge Alston had read all of the materials submitted by the prosecution and the defense, and he had questions, but first, each side would speak. U.S. Attorney William Fitzpatrick took the lectern, surrounded by plexiglass on three sides, facing the judge. He began by pointing out that, often, multiple charges are applied as part of one criminal act, but in this case, Stewart had committed three distinct crimes. Each time, he chose to make a decision to commit a crime, Fitzpatrick said. This is not a single error of judgment, the judge agreed. The communications demonstrated in each of these schemes outrageous and fundamental lies, the prosecutor continued. He had taken advantage of a national emergency, he told the judge, and duped our government in its time of need. The lie was direct, the lie was clear, the lie was impactful, the prosecutor said. The question you have to answer is, the judge said, is this a person with malice in his heart? Your Honor, I think there was gross negligence, gross recklessness, the prosecutor responded. The fact that this was in a national emergency, this was not for the federal government to acquire paper, this was for the medical supplies we needed. When people are desperate, the judge said, nodding, he does these things. Stewart must be made an example of, the prosecutor argued. There is an impactful deterrence factor, Fitzpatrick said. When he fraudulently obtained more than $1 million in pandemic relief loans, Stewart was not destitute, he continued. He had $400,000 in equity in a house, $20,000 in a retirement fund, three cars, and more. As for the long-running scam against the VA for heightened benefits, the prosecutor continued, that conduct is particularly aggravating. To make stuff up, to lie about being a Marine, about being a decorated Marine, it's brazen and it's shameless. Alston added, he knew what he was doing was wrong, and it's that makes it more suspicious as to what his heart is. Stewart sat silent and still. It did not look good. Stewart had become the poster child of greed in the COVID-19 era. He'd come to represent something big, something ugly about our country, our time, about ourselves. Yet, he is only a man. And can we ever truly know what's in a man's heart? And does it matter? For all his crimes, the prosecution concluded, Stewart had accepted responsibility in a full-throated manner, which should be considered in sentencing. Stewart's attorney took the lectern to offer the rebuttal. Stewart was a man who went down a bad road and then spiraled out of control, the defense attorney told the judge. Mr. Stewart isn't an evil person with bad stuff in his heart. I'm almost willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, the judge responded. The mask deals with the plane and the VA and the brokers, he said. I can see how someone could get caught up in that. But the premeditation of the other crimes, that has to be balanced with the argument he was over his skis. What kind of message would the court be sending, the judge asked, if he didn't send Stewart to prison for a couple of decades? The defense attorney rattled off all the reasons. He's a new father. He's paid the money back. He's back in school. His friends have attested to his character. He did serve his country. After a long moment, Judge Alston's eyes darted to Stuart. In a fatherly cadence, the judge instructed him that whatever he said next would have a profound impact on the rest of his life. Stuart stood and faced him. "What I want to know is why you, as an intelligent man, thought you could get away with this," the judge said. "Why the court should think that you're not just a slick guy who is taking advantage of vulnerable people." Finally, it was Stuart's turn to explain. "First and foremost, I would like to apologize to you, everyone in this courtroom, and the American people," he began. "My conduct was repulsive, really repugnant." He told the story of how his son was born on April 14, 2020, perhaps the most frightening time to have a child in recent memory. "Back then, I was a pretty selfish guy," he said. "I had a business, and I sort of had this I-can-do mentality. I saw an opportunity, not to hurt people, but maybe to help people. I can't change anything about the past, and I am a shitty person. But that does not mean I can't be a father." At the word father, Stuart choked into a cry, stopping himself short of sobbing. "I got into a situation and I just messed up. My dad was a decorated war hero," he managed to say next. "I was in the chair force, so to speak. I didn't do the things which I thought would make me great. I did the thing that made me a villain, made me somebody I never wanted to be. I grew up in a pretty poor and desperate place, and I have a fear of dying poor and dying alone. I saw my parents struggling, and I didn't want to do that." "It was greed, it was fear," Judge Alston responded. "You not only achieved, you overcame, but you got greedy." "I hold my son," Stuart struggled to say. "I don't like myself. I hold my son, and I hope he doesn't grow up anything like his father." His own father, Stuart said, was ashamed of him, but he had a chance with his son. Stuart asked to read aloud a letter he'd written to the one-year-old. "Dre," he read, "I'm going to pray extra hard and hope that God places his hands over you and your mom and gives you strength to forgive me. Last year, your daddy made some big mistakes. I hurt a lot of people and got into a lot of trouble." When Stuart finished, Judge Alston offered an anecdote about his own father, a tough man of an older generation who withheld affirmation from his children for nearly his entire life. "Yet on the day his father died," the judge said, he grabbed his son's hand and finally said, "I know you did your best." The point was, the judge told Stuart, you can still do things that make your dad proud. The time had come for Stuart's judgment. "You're either the best manipulator I've ever met," the judge said, "or you're a man who has changed in his heart. I'm not going to sentence you to a long time of incarceration," he continued, "but I do believe you need to see the inside of a prison." In what the judge acknowledged was a huge break for Stuart, he was sentenced to just 1 year and 9 months in prison, with 3 years of probation. It is not for me to say what Stuart did or did not deserve, and I don't know what's in his heart. But I would be lying if I said I wasn't relieved he'd have a chance to know and raise his son. And maybe, if time is kind, make his father proud. I hope he's not too hard on himself or the boy. For if we were destined to repeat the sins of our fathers, this country would not be worth saving. I believe it is.